This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Art music is a vast, complex and dynamic genre filled with beauty, joy, strangeness and wonderment. And you'll find all of it here, in the joy of classical music. That was George Gershwin playing Fascinating Rhythm, the hit from 1924's Lady Be Good, the first of seven Broadway musicals he wrote with his brother Ira. Starring the brother and sister team of Fred and Adele Astaire, the show centred on a pair of siblings who are out of money but are ready to do what it takes to help the other. This version of Fascinating Rhythm was recorded in London by George Gershwin and Fred and Adele during the show's West End run in 1926. Kia ora koutou, I'm Andrew Johnstone, and welcome to episode 140 of The Joy of Classical Music, and part one of From the Concert Hall to the Musical Stage. From the 1930s through the 1950s, composers in America and elsewhere were beginning to imagine a new kind of musical theatre, a fusion of styles that borrowed from established operatic traditions, Broadway, and popular music and culture. Whatever it was going to be, it wasn't going to happen overnight. it would be something that evolved over time through a process of imaginative experimentation. And over the next few weeks, we'll be listening to music from some of the key players, composers like Leonard Bernstein, Mark Blitzstein, Kurt Weill, and George Gershwin, whose Porgy and Bess would be one of the first fully realized examples of the new musical theatre. At age 10, George Gershwin took an interest in the piano his parents had just purchased for older brother Ira. In an interview from the 1950s, Ira recalls the family surprise when George adjusted the height of the piano stool, sat down and played a note-perfect version of a popular song. Unknown to them, he'd been teaching himself to play on a friend's piano. None of which bothered Ira. He had no interest in learning the piano. As would soon become apparent, his talents lay elsewhere. George could play well enough, but he was restless to improve. At age 14, he started taking lessons with highly regarded multi-instrumentalist and composer Charles Hambitzer, who taught him conventional piano techniques, introduced him to the work of the great composers, and took him to concerts where he encouraged him to listen with his nerves, his mind, and his heart. Of his young prodigy, Hambitzer said, "I have a new pupil who will make his mark if anybody will. This boy is a genius." Hambitzer remained Gershwin's mentor until his death from tuberculosis in 1918. In 1919, George Gershwin was 21 years old and had been a professional songwriter for about 5 years. He was doing okay, but had not yet written a breakout hit. On this particular day, he is riding with lyricist Irving Caesar on a New York bus, and they are discussing a recent commission to write two songs for an upcoming New York review called Demi Tasse, and decided to write one in the style of Stephen Foster's Old Folks at Home. They put it together in about 10 minutes. The song is selected to open the review, and while the show does all right, the song garners no particular interest. A few weeks later, Irving Caesar is invited to attend a party at Al Jolson's house and takes George with him. At this point in the story, it's probably important to note that Jolson is the biggest popular music star in the world, and to get to hang with him at a party is no small thing. George finds his way to Jolson's piano and starts playing the song. Jolson takes an immediate interest and tells Irving and George that he'd like to add it to his current Broadway review. The song goes down gangbusters, and in early 1920, Jolson goes into the studio to record it. Swanee is released in April 1920 and spends 18 weeks on the hit parade, 9 of those at number 1. The third biggest song of that year, it racks up 2 million in record sales and 1 million in sheet music sales, and makes so much money that the young George Gershwin is able to determine the course of his career for the remainder of his short life. Sometime in the 1990s, I was fishing around in one of those big bins full of cheap CDs the warehouse used to keep at the front of its stores, and picked out a Jolson compilation. I'd recently read an article about him and was curious to know what he sounded like. I got into the car and put the CD into the player, and Swanee was the first song out of the speakers, and I've loved it with a passion ever since. From 1946, here's the version Jolson recorded for the film The Al Jolson Story.
I've been away from you a long time. I never thought I'd miss you so. Somehow I feel your love is real. Near you I want to be. The birds are singing, it is song time. The banjo strumming soft and low. I know that you yearn for me too. Swanee, you're calling me. Swanee, how I love you, how I love you, my dear old Swanee. I'd give the world to be among the folks in D-I-X. I even know my mammy's waiting for me, praying for me down by the Swanee. The folks up north will see me no more when I get to that Swanee shore. I love the old folks at home. Swanee, how I love you, how I love you, my dear old Swanee. I'd give the world to be among the folks in the sex, I even know my mammy's waiting for me, praying for me down by the Swanee. The folks up north will see me no more when I get to that Swanee shore.
Around the same time that Swanee was sweeping all before it, Gershwin was studying composition and instrumentation with Edward Kalenyi, a composer and violinist with the Waldorf Astoria Orchestra. The result of his first harmony exercise was Lullaby, a one-movement work for string quartet. It became a favourite at the private musicales held by Gershwin's friends, but was never formally published or performed. In 1922, Gershwin took the melody from Lullaby to create an aria for his opera Blue Monday, and that's the most anyone heard of Lullaby until 1967, when it was formally published and given its first public outing by the Juilliard String Quartet.
Thank you.
Before we go any further, here's Irish soprano Frances Lucy with Has Anyone Seen My Joe? That aria from Blue Monday. In 1923, bandleader Paul Whiteman commissioned a now 25-year-old George Gershwin to write a jazzy classical piece for an upcoming concert called An Experiment in Modern Music, which George promptly forgot about until he saw the concert advertised in a newspaper on January the 4th, 1924. He set to work and finished the manuscript on January the 25th, ready for the February the 12th premiere at New York's Aeolian Hall. The audience loved Gershwin's contribution, but critics were divided. Lawrence Gilman of the New York Tribune dismissed the work as trite, feeble, and conventional, while Pitt Sanborn of the New York Evening Mail described it as meaningless repetition. Olin Downs of the New York Times hailed Gershwin as a new talent finding its voice and praised the work's highly original form, while Deems Taylor of the New York World said it was crude but hinted at something revolutionary. Gershwin and Whiteman recorded the first version of Rhapsody in Blue in June 1924, but due to the technical limitations of the time, it was abridged to fit on the disc. By 1927, the technology had advanced enough for Gershwin and Whiteman to record it in full, and the result was another million seller. from 1959, here's Leonard Bernstein and the Columbia Symphony Orchestra.
Thank you.
the 1920s, there was a strict separation between serious and popular music, and many in the musical establishment believed that Gershwin was wasting his genius on Broadway tunes. Following the success of Rhapsody in Blue, an interviewer asked him if he would now leave popular music and concentrate on serious composition. He responded by saying that a composer's skill should be used to elevate whatever medium they chose. He believed that popular music was the most vital expression of American life and that it required as much technical goodness as any symphony, and did not see his work in musical theatre as inferior to his serious orchestral compositions. He argued that if a composer is too good for popular music, they should use that talent to make popular music better. In 1928, he found himself in Paris, where he applied to study composition with Nadia Bollinger, Maurice Ravel, and Igor Stravinsky. Bollinger said, "What could I give you that you haven't already got?" Ravel was concerned that rigorous classical study would ruin his jazz-influenced style. Why become a second-rate Ravel when you're already a first-rate Gershwin? Stravinsky wondered how much money he had made from Rhapsody in Blue. When told the figure, he famously replied, "Well then, maybe it's I who should be taking music lessons from you." But Gershwin was never going to sit on his laurels, and despite the endorsement of his open-minded and supportive European peers, on his return home, he spent the early 1930s taking lessons from radical composers like Henry Cowell and Joseph Schillinger as he sought to push his own boundaries and the boundaries of American popular music.
Days can be sunny with never a sigh. Don't need what money can buy. Birds in the trees sing their day full of song. Why shouldn't we sing along? Look at what I've got. I got rhythm, I got music, I got my man. Who could ask for anything more? I got daisies in green pastures. I got my man. Who could ask for anything more? Old man Trouble, I don't mind him. You won't find him round my door. I got starlight, I got sweet dreams, I got my man. Who could ask for anything more? Who could ask for anything more?
Judy Garland singing I Got Rhythm, one of the hits from George and Ira Gershwin's 1930 musical Girl Crazy. The early 30s were a busy time for George. There were 4 films, 5 musicals, and 3 concert pieces. In 1926, Gershwin had started thinking about an adaptation of Du Bois Heywood's 1925 novel Porgy, and in 1934 he got down to some serious work, and the result was the first American folk opera. set in Catfish Row, a fictional black tenement in Charleston, South Carolina. Porgy and Bess centres on the relationship between a disabled street beggar called Porgy and Bess, a woman struggling with addiction and abusive men. From the 1959 MGM film adaptation, here's a song that needs no introduction. Porgy and Bess premiered at the Colonial Theatre in Boston on September the 30th, 1935, on a tryout run before its Broadway debut at the Alvin Theatre in New York on October the 10th, 1935. Brooks Atkinson of the New York Times described it as something glorious, while Elliot Norton of the Boston Post hailed it as a theatrical miracle. Olin Downs of the New York Post commended the score for its vivid use of local materials and noted that it was uncommonly interesting compared to the often out-of-date staging of traditional opera. Classical critics struggled with the work's genre-bending nature, while other more mainstream critics praised the way it bridged the gap between opera and popular entertainment with its artful use of jazz, blues, spirituals, and classical traditions. From the 1959 film adaptation, here's Robert McFerrin with I Got Plenty of Nuttin', music by George Gershwin, lyrics by Du Bois Heywood and Ira Gershwin.
Oh, I got plenty of nothing, and nothing's plenty for me. I got no car, got no mule, I got no misery. Oh, folks with plenty of plenty, got a lock on their door. Afraid somebody's going to rob them while they's out making more. What for? I got no lock on the door. That's no way to be. They can steal the rug from the floor. That's okay with me. Cause the things that I prize, like the stars in the skies, all are free. Oh, I got plenty of nothing, and nothing's plenty for me.
I got my gal, got my song, got heaven the whole day long. No use complaining, got my gal, got my Lord, got my soul.
Plenty of nothing, and nothing's plenty for me.
I got the sun, got the moon, got the deep blue sea. The folks with plenty of plenty got to pray all the day. Seems with plenty, you sure got to worry how to keep the devil away. Time arrives. Never worry long as I'm well. Never want to strive to be good, to be bad. What the hell? Eyes glad, eyes alive. Oh, I got plenty of nothing, and nothing's plenty for me. I got my gal, got my song, got heaven the whole day long. No use complaining, got my girl, got my Lord, got my soul.
Hampered by the Great Depression and mixed reviews, the Broadway run of Porgy and Bess closed after an unprofitable 135 performances. But with its groundbreaking musical stylings, superlative songs, and bold political subtext, Porgy and Bess was not going away, and 91 years after its debut, it stands as a cornerstone work of the new musical theatre and Gershwin's crowning achievement, one he never got the opportunity to surpass, dying 2 years later from a brain tumour. He was 38 years old. Next week, it's the new musical theatre as imagined by Dmitri Shostakovich. He toured Villa-Lobos and Mark Blitstein. But before I go, this quote from George. Jazz, I regard as an American folk music, and it is probably in the blood and feeling of the American people more than any other style.
Thank you.
Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.